We're delighted today to have Lynn Thornton with us, who is the team manager for the Patient Transport Advice Service. I've known Lynn for quite a few years, and she has lots of experience within Devon County Council Transport Team and working initially, I know, with community transport. So she has a vast amount of knowledge. I'm delighted she's with us today, and I'd like to hand over to Lynn straight away so we can hear from her.
Thank you very much, Judy. Hello, everybody. Very nice to sort of meet you. Judy was very kind in her introduction of me, but yes, I have been working for Devon County Council for 27 years. 20 of those were spent in support for community transport organisations, and for the last 6 years, I have been the manager of Patient Transport Advice Service for Devon. So, kind of to sum it up a bit, we'd been working with the Primary Care Trust, as it was then, for probably about 15 years, and saying to them that the way that you run your transport through SWAST, as it was, your non-emergency patient transport, we think we could probably help you and make that process a bit smoother. And we kept having changes of staff and things didn't happen, and then all of a sudden the incumbent NEPTS, non-emergency patient transport NEPTS supplier decided that they didn't want to carry on providing the service and handed it back. And at the same time, this is about 7 years ago, the Department for Transport also offered some funding called Total Transport Funding. And we applied for that and gained some funding, and that helped us to set up the Patient Transport Advice Service for Devon. So what we do, at the same sort of time as the previous provider handed their contract back, that was a company called NFL, the contract from the CCG, the Clinical Commissioning Group, was won by First Care Ambulance. So we work through PTAS, Patient Transport Advice Service, PTAS. We work as a broker for people coming through us, the general public coming through us to see if they are eligible for NEPT, non-emergency patient transport. And if they are eligible, we will book them onto the transport that's available. And if they're not eligible, then we give them advice on alternatives. What we are able to do is act as a gatekeeper so that we are making sure that the right people who need transport and who are eligible are getting access to what they need. But those who are not eligible, we will then give them advice on alternatives. And because of our position, that might be around public transport, might be about community transport, taxis, help with health costs as well, which is an NHS England scheme. So those are all things that we give advice on. We cover the whole of Devon and Plymouth, apart from the Torbay area, which is covered by Torbay Transport. That is for people with South Devon GPs going into Torbay Hospital. But for the rest of the county, we provide transport support and bookings. So we book people either onto the NEPT contract with First Care Ambulance, if they're eligible, or for people who are frequent attenders, so travelling 3 or more times per week or 10 or more times per month. And that is generally people going for oncology appointments or for renal dialysis. Those people we will provide contracted cars. And when we provide contracted cars, we use the Devon County Council Dynamic Purchasing System, which means that we are providing cars with drivers who have been enhanced EBS checked and also that their vehicles are up to standard and have been serviced, MOT'd, insured, etc. So by going through the dynamic purchasing system, that helps to bring in some quality assurance for the clinical commissioning group. I'm going to carry on calling them the Clinical Commissioning Group, CCG, at the moment, but please be aware it has now changed and is no longer the Clinical Commissioning Group. It is now the ICB, which is the Integrated Care Board. So not my fault. The NHS is a world of many, many acronyms. And so I have been trying to make sure that I use both the words that, and the acronyms to sort of help you get used to those things. So, we take bookings from the acute hospitals at Derriford and Exeter and North Devon, and we take bookings for discharges from those hospitals. We also arrange transport for outpatient appointments, admissions, and as I mentioned earlier, renal dialysis appointments, and also oncology. In addition to that, we also provide transport for people going to certain mental health appointments, the Devon Partnership Trust. So it's office. We're not a big team. There are only, 16 of us, and not all of those are part-time, so I think it's about 14 and a half full-time equivalent. And we deal with several, generally we're 250 or so calls a day that we're dealing with, and it's several thousand journeys every month that we're dealing with and handling. So that's sort of a very quick trot around the background to what we do. Are there any questions so far?
Anybody got anything they'd like to? I've got a question, of course, Lynn, yes. But if anyone else has a question.
Can I just make a quick observation? Yes. It's Les.
Go ahead, Les, and then I could hear somebody else in the background.
It was Christine.
Right, so we'll have Les first, then Christine.
Very quickly, I just wanted to say I am staggered at the numbers of actual assistance that you give to patients and across such a broad breadth of treatments and departments. I mean, if it's 250 a day, over 10 days, that's 2,500 over 20 days, that's 5,000, and that's just in a month. That is a huge department, and to be run with the staff that you've got, I mean, I think congratulations are in order because the pressure is always cascading down, but I am absolutely sort of really impressed, if you like, that in a good way, I didn't realise exactly just how much support, and if you spread that over a year, that is a huge amount of assistance that you're offering to the residents in Devon.
Yes, thank you. Much appreciated. I'm incredibly proud of my team. They work amazingly hard. We're always trying to get a bit more support, actually. We're always trying to get a few more staff in place. But it's quite hard to get funding, as I'm sure you're all very aware. Funding is incredibly tight on statutory services at the moment. We are very tight. I'm just trying to put statistics in front of me in case you're interested of what we did last year.
Hello. Could I ask a question when you're ready?
You can, Alan and then you must have Christine as well. So we're
oh, sorry Christine. About that. Sorry.
No, not at all. We have Christine first, then we'll come to you. Christine.
Yes. I'm also impressed, like Les, with the sheer volume of trips that you must do, Lynn. I've got a sort of question or a comment about first care. It might not be appropriate at this stage of your talk, but we did use them because we needed my husband to be, if like, on a stretcher. And the vans that they use are modified sprinter vans, and it did not feel as though it had the necessary comfort, if I'm quite honest, for a stretcher patient. And I feel like that's a comment I'm making, but I didn't know whether you had any comments about the transport that is used, or indeed, you know, the quality that it goes through to make sure that it's comfortable for the patient who may be in pain.
Sure. It's a very good question. So first care ambulance, we, as I work for Devon County Council, we are not the commissioners of their service. Their service is commissioned through what was the clinical commissioning group. Yes, I agree with you. The vehicles aren't as comfortable as they perhaps could be for stretchers. And we do frequently have that conversation with ward staff who make bookings for stretchers for comfort. And they literally put that in the booking, stretcher for comfort. Yeah. And we ring the ward and say, have you ever travelled in a vehicle on a stretcher? You might not realise that it's not as comfortable as you might like to think. The vehicles are actually, I know, are currently being upgraded. So they are investing in a new fleet as we speak. So I think most of their vehicles have been replaced. Obviously, they travel a lot of distance, a lot of miles, but it's very difficult to get the cost efficiency of a vehicle that can do the job. And you could say, well, it'd be wonderful to have the most amazing suspension on the vehicle. That isn't always practical. So, yes, I think there's always a desire to make things better, but I think that probably the type of vehicles which are available on the market at the moment, you're never going to find something that's perfect, unfortunately. And we've got Devon Roads to take into consideration.
I was going to mention that is an aspect, but no, I'm reassured that you are aware of what I was talking about, and it's useful to know that they're commissioned by what was the CCC, and I'll bear that in mind. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're very welcome.
Shall we have, was it Richard? I wasn't
Alan,
sure.
Alan Brown, Sidmouth.
Hello, Alan.
I didn't join last week, so I'm a little bit of a newcomer.
No, you're very welcome, Alan. Fire away.
Yeah, I agree with everything Les has said. Well, I mean, I've never used you, but if half what you say is true, then it's very good. Anyway, my question is, what are the criteria and who do I ring to find out if I apply for that criteria? Or do I tell you? Or
okay. So I have a team who take phone calls, as I said earlier, from patients to assess their eligibility. So I obviously can't tell you exactly what the eligibility is. I couldn't go through the questions with you because some patients, very few I'm glad to say, some patients are a bit keen to embellish the truth to get transport. Other patients that we have, I'm being very polite there, other patients that we have, you almost have to persuade them that actually they really do need support. We had an amazing lady in her 80s who didn't have a proper drive to her house, who said, no, that's fine. I'll just get my husband, I'll pull his arms over my shoulders and I'll drag him out to the ambulance out to the road. You don't want to bring your vehicle up to the path. And when you get people out, you think, my goodness, you really deserve an ambulance. Please don't do that. We will get your husband's
property.
Absolutely. Some other people, sadly, are rude and demanding when they obviously don't really qualify. So it isn't an easy job, and my staff are always trying to provide quality.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
This is Alan, by the way.
I can tell you. Basically, patients are always expected to make their own way to hospital appointments if they possibly can. So if you're able in your everyday life to access your GP surgery, to have a social life where you go out and about, then that should, your hospital appointment should be given the same priority as your social engagements, basically, or your shopping or anything else. So if you are managing that quite comfortably with the support of friends or family or use of a taxi, for example, or a voluntary car, then you would be expected to use that normal method to get to your hospital appointments. If your mobility was such that you needed the support of trained crew members to assist you out of your property because you were you weren't able to walk because your legs were in pain or you're damaged in some way that you couldn't, you had to be lifted and carried out of your property, then it becomes a requirement for you to book non-emergency patient transport. So it is about mobility, about your ability to travel independently. So if you can travel independently, then you should be making your own way. If you're not able to travel independently, if you need the intervention of a crew, then you would qualify. It is not, finance is not a reason for accessing non-emergency transport, I'm afraid. And we do get that question a lot where people say, I can't afford a taxi. And sadly, that is not one of the qualifying reasons. I'm actually currently doing a lot of work with NHS England Improvement on updating the eligibility criteria and also looking at the help with health costs. It's HTCS, it's the Health Cost Travel Reclaim Scheme. We are currently working on improving that scheme to make the time span between putting a claim in, if it has to go in the post, and getting your money back much shorter. It's currently up to 90 days, and we want to reduce that down to a maximum of 30 if you're doing it by post. If, however, you are in receipt of certain income-related benefits, if you go to, if for example, you went to the RD&E at Exeter and you have your appointment letter and proof of your benefits, current proof of your benefits that you're receiving, and you go to the cash desk or the general inquiries office in the main reception, if you qualify, they will repay your receipt for your cost of travel at that time. They will do that right away. So, yeah, we're all working on improving that.
Well, could you give me a number that I could ring or somebody who I could get? I mean, if you can't do it, you know, I'm not a scoundrel or anything, but
no.
At the moment I've had a really bad 15 months, so I would like to just, I'm going to be on my own now. Anyway, it's a long story.
Okay.
Alan, I think, Lynn, is there a phone number for your team?
Yes, there is. I was just have that at hand.
Yeah,
and
lovely.
I'm sure you can supply it.
I will take note of it and share it round.
Yeah. Do you want me to say it out now, Judy? Or
yes, that would be great.
Okay. So it's 0345.
Yeah.
155.
Yeah.
1009.
Got it. That's lovely.
0009. Could I just repeat that?
Do, Alan.
Of course
yes.
You can.
Yeah. 0345 155.
Yep.
Hang on. Pull my eyes out. It's good.
No, that's fine.
I think it's 1009.
Perfect. That's correct. Good. Yeah. So we are open from 8:30 in the morning until 5 in the evening, Monday to Friday. We're not open at weekends and we're not open on bank holidays, but we are
really
open
helpful.
For the rest of those times.
Just so everyone knows, I've taken that number down, and if anybody isn't able to write it down as Alan was, just give us a call at the office and we have that number here for you. That's amazing. Have we got any more questions for Lynn? Because I know she does need to leave.
It's fine. You know, I'm here. Please do ask as many questions as you like while I'm here.
Okay.
Hello,
it's
Lynn.
Jane here.
It's Karen here.
Right.
Thank you
so
much
for
that.
Hang on a minute. We've got Jane and we've got Karen.
Sorry.
I think Jane got in first, then we'll
have
Karen.
Okay, Jane, go ahead.
No worries.
All I want to do is qualify that. You say, I'm not for everyone here on the call. It's about assessing how you qualify. It's obviously the physical disability, but if you are confused or mental ill, do you still get, could you possibly still qualify? Or if you had a stroke and you can't, do you know what I mean? You still got to, do you see what I mean? Is it if physical, absolutely, but also what about if you just mentally can't travel independently at that stage of your life?
Again, a very good question. What we do quite often take patients who are living with dementia, and the reason for that is they cannot plan and execute a journey successfully themselves and safely themselves. So if a person is living with dementia and some people get to the point where, I'm going to use some terms which might not sound very good, but we quite often get people referred to as pleasantly muddled. So if somebody's pleasantly muddled, they will quite happily sit still in a vehicle and not try and get out, and they can travel quite safely. And these people are carried by the voluntary car schemes. They'll have a member of the family with them who can support them, and they can travel quite safely. When it gets to the point that person is no longer compliant, or they're too confused or too scared, and they cannot sit safely in the vehicle without trying to get out, for example, then that comes to the point where they should be looking to travel on patient transport, because there is that level of assistance and care in the back of the vehicle that will make sure that person doesn't try to get out and doesn't is still kept safe. For somebody with a stroke, we do quite often take stroke patients. Again, it comes down to the level of need of that person. So if they are, for example, a wheelchair user and they don't have their own wheelchair accessible vehicle, and they're not able to access a wheelchair accessible taxi, for example, and not able to transfer from their wheelchair into a standard car, then we would look at supporting that person. So it's quite difficult for me to be 100% black and white with you here about who qualifies and who doesn't, because it's very much about the individual, as I'm sure you're aware. We're not dealing with parcels, we are dealing with people, and we have conversations with people to help them through the eligibility process to see if they qualify or not. So we do try, as I say, I've got some really good staff who will try their very best to help anybody through the process. But there are certain things that they have to ask, because certain people, unfortunately, aren't eligible. It's the medical need for an appointment doesn't give you the automatic need for transport provision. So that's what we're trying to weed out, is those who are capable of making their own way. And sometimes it's a very difficult decision, and we do try to help everybody, and certainly to give advice, but sometimes we're not able to help that person or actually provide the transport for them, and sometimes it goes back to them being given advice on other ways that they should try to access their appointment. Is that okay?
That's great, then, because I think, to be honest, you've just summed it up, actually. You're not just saying no, you're pointing them to other ways of accessing transport that's suitable. And I know that you're going to talk to them about the HCTS scheme as well. So it's not just a no-go way, is it? It's a no, but no. These are other options, because
absolutely.
I think you said right at the beginning, this is all down to pressures on finance, and it has to go to those people who are in the greatest need.
It does. We are, we want to say yes to as many people as possible, but there has to be, as always, there has to be a limit. And that's always the difficult bit, is where you find people who are just on the cusp. We only deal with Devon GP registered patients. So if somebody's from outside of the county, then we don't deal with those.
Yeah.
Just to sort of make you aware, we are a Pathfinder project at the moment, as I said, working with NHS England a lot, and they have released updated guidance on eligibility criteria, which is available on their website. And that was released in May, and it comes into force at the end of March next year. It doesn't impact massively on the way we do things in Devon, because I'm very pleased to say that when you read a lot of the guidance, especially stuff that came out last week or the week before, it sounds like it was written by Devon. So they are using the model that we use. Nowhere else at the moment, really. Somerset is close to what we do, but not quite the same. Nowhere else in the country particularly works in the way that we do, with the NHS and the local authority working together in partnership. So, you know, the way we do things is at the forefront, which, like I say, I'm incredibly proud about. We are being held up as an example of how it could be done, other people are able to contact us and ask us about the way that we do things. And there are other Pathfinder projects, Sussex and Yorkshire, who are also going on this journey with us through Pathfinder, and they are not in the same position as us, so they're not working as local authority. They're purely about their clinical commissioning groups, and we're 6 years ahead of everybody else, which is interesting, but we are learning every day and we are changing and adapting every day to try and make things better. Sometimes you wouldn't think that we are better than others or ahead of the field when you get some of the conversations from some of the hospitals, but everybody always wants something more. But we're trying really hard to make our services as good as possible for the residents of Devon.
That sounds amazing. I know that Devon County has got a history of working in partnership with other organisations, and I think you're just carrying the flag forward, Lynn.
We are. We're trying our best.
We have one last question from Karen.
Yes, hello, Lynn. Wanted to add that I'm in Torbay, so I go to Torbay Hospital, and yes. I know that for their eligibility, you have to have proof of benefits, your appointment letter, and you also have to have a letter from your GP to say that you can't actually get to the hospital by public transport. And it's that letter, that's quite important, actually, in Torbay. And then if the other thing is that there is a sort of hospital transport service, but they've said we have to have 4 or 5 days' notice. And also my local charity, Totnes Caring, who may take me, if there's, they need about 2 weeks' notice in order to go from Totnes to get a volunteer driver. So sometimes I've had to have taxi cabs because for like an eye injection appointment, that they'll sometimes ring you up and it's 3 days' time, you know, so... and they'll give me the letter when I arrive there, so I've got it to take to the office in order to get reimbursed. But those taxi cabs can be sort of £30 there, £30 home.
Yes.
So that's £60. So it's very, it's so helpful to be able to get that.
Yes.
And my question is, I know Torbay is a different model, maybe. I'm wondering why and what that different model is. But also, do you, in your model, is there a criteria about you've got to give us a certain amount of days' notice?
Okay.
That's the question, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Thank you. Yeah, lovely. So, yes, Torbay is slightly different. I'm laughing because there was a desire to get the whole of the county under PTAS, Patient Transport Advice Service, my service, but that hasn't come to fruition as yet. Torbay Hospital have their own booking service and their own transport service as well. Their eligibility criteria is not a million miles from what we do, because we should all be working to the national criteria. They do things slightly different to us, yes, but it's not a million miles from what we do. For us, for my service, we won't take bookings more than 2 weeks in advance, because people are quite likely to change or their appointments get changed, etc. We can do on the day bookings at times. However, if you book on the day, it can be up to 4 hours wait. So if you had an appointment tomorrow and you qualified for an ambulance, and you rang and called us and we went through it and said, yes, you qualify, then we would book it in, and First Care Ambulance Service would have to endeavour to provide that transport. So we do ours 24 hours to 2 weeks effectively, but we will do certain things on the day if we do. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
I'm just wondering
if the volunteer, you know, when I ring up for a kind of an appointment, I mean, you do such specialised, help. And I'm wondering whether Torbay actually offers something that is more specialised that I don't know about, because I've never had to use it. You know, when you talk about an ambulance.
No, it's very similar. No, they've got ambulances, and it's very, very similar to what we provide in the rest of Devon. So, as one of the attendees explained earlier, it's a converted van, effectively, and Torbay vehicles are very similar, to my knowledge.
Mm. Thank you.
That's really helpful. Thank you for bringing that up, Karen, because I think that was relevant for many of our members who are being treated at the eye clinic. Really good to know, Lynn, that if they suddenly have the need for an injection, which could save their sight, but there is a possibility, if they meet your criteria, that they might be able to get that within a couple of days. And as Karen's pointed out, usually they're told, you know, you need to be here tomorrow or the day after, if that injection has been missed, for example. So that's really useful for us to know.
Yep, no problem.
I think we must say thank you so much to Lynn. I've been scribbling down. I've got lots of notes, which we will incorporate into our fact sheet at head office. So if anybody needs to talk to us and go through what Lynn has said again, we've got some of that knowledge as well now. And we know where Lynn is. We have her number.
She's
also extremely good at answering emails if I send her an email. So thank you so much for your time, Lynn. We can hear now how busy you are.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
This was really, really helpful. And I know everybody on the call is very good at spreading the word too, to make sure that people understand now that it's about mobility largely, but everything is done very much on a case-by-case basis. So thank you, Lynn.
You're very welcome. I'm sure we will see you again. Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say, I think somebody was interested in the number of calls we took.
Yes.
Last year, we had 55,500 incoming calls and nearly 35,000 outgoing calls we made last year.
Goodness me.
So we're quite busy.
Lynn, I have one more question, please. It's Karen again. If someone living in the Torbay area who goes to Torbay Hospital for appointments, then for some reason, you know, clinical reason, has to go to a hospital in Exeter, say, for you know, to see a different sort of specialist or whatever, can they apply to you for help, even though they live in Torbay, if the appointment is at Exeter?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. So if you're living in the Torbay area and you go to Torbay Hospital, you're under their system. If you're in the Torbay area but you're coming out of that area and you're coming to Exeter or to Derriford or North Devon, for example, then yes, you call us.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you. That's
lovely.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Lynn. And
you're very
we will
welcome.
Be in touch. Very nice to meet you all. Thank you. Bye. As I mentioned earlier on, we're extremely lucky to have two speakers today, and we do have Jess with us, Jess Smith,
And Jess is also part of the Devon County Council transport team. She's a new member and is a graduate transport planner. So we know we've got somebody here that really understands the issues we all face day to day. And she's particularly involved at the moment with a new project called Connecting You, which is to help relieve loneliness and isolation. So Jess, would you like to tell us a little bit more about yourself perhaps, and also particularly about that scheme and what it's going to do?
Yes, hello. I'm Jess. I'm a graduate, so I've just left university and started at the council a few months ago. So there's two things I would want to talk to you about today, obviously Connecting You, as Judy said, but also the Devon Access Wallet. I know some of you may already know about it, but I know there is some unclarity and uncertainty towards it. So I'm going to start with that first, and then I'll go on to Connecting You. So the Devon Access Wallet is available to people who have impairments or disabilities. And what happens is if you get onto a bus or a train or any sort of transport and you would like to show the driver or inform the driver that you may need assistance, that these are available. And as I said to Judy a few weeks back, that all you need is a diagnosis letter. Send it over, or you can call us and we can discuss it with you and issue one out. So that's the first thing I want to clarify, because I know there's some people who are nervous to access them. Please don't be nervous to access them. They are there for you to use and they're there to be helpful. So I thought I'd just clear that up before I went into Connecting You.
That's lovely. Jess, can I just jump in there as well? Because many of our members will know that we also send those out. We get them from Devon County Council, and it was Jess's suggestion that Devon Insight should also produce a card that says, I have sight loss, that Devon Insight will issue to anybody that doesn't have perhaps a registration of sight loss yet, but they still have sight loss. So it was it's great. We're already starting to plug some gaps. So I think what Jess is saying is that you can either ring their team and get hold of one of those access wallets, or you can ring Devon Insight as well.
Yes, and they're very useful, and we are finding more and more organisations. So Dimension for Autism, which is also a Devon-based community, they have also just created their own card as well to put into the access wallet. So if we get more organisations and things, it would be really, really good to have them. So the second thing is Connecting You. So there's two things. So the first thing I want to introduce is Travel Buddies. So Travel Buddies is a scheme where we have, well, there's two things. There's Travel Buddies and Travel Trainers. So Travel Trainers are, if you are unsure how to get, let's say, to a supermarket or cafe to meet your friends or down to the beach, what they will do is they will create an independent training plan. We'll get onto the bus with you. We'll do the whole journey with you a few times until you feel comfortable. And then they will retract the support. Or they'll pass you on to another scheme called Travel Buddies, where if you're comfortable going from the doorstep to the bus stop and then onto the bus, what they will do, they'll meet you at a bus stop or a transport hub or a cafe. This obviously has to be pre-booked. And they will get onto the bus or train or any mode of transport that you are using and will support you from stop till stop. So if you maybe haven't been on the bus for 5-6 hours, you feel uncomfortable, you've had a bad experience, maybe the driver pulled off when you hadn't sat down, or they shouted out the wrong number to you, it just kind of tries to alleviate that anxiety and get more people back onto the buses. So this then joins into my second thing, which is driver training. So what we're doing as a council is we are creating a driver training program. So although it's not going to be CPC verified, it will be given out to all bus companies. There'll be a few events that they are welcome to attend. But what we are trying to do is plug the gaps that are currently showing in driver awareness of disabilities. Things like auditory processing, sight loss from using a wheelchair or being unable to walk more than a couple of meters, or even stuff like dementia, Alzheimer's. So kind of a really wide scope of things. So this is where I kind of want to come back to you, and I'm going to ask for your advice or help. So we're creating this driver training plan, but what would you like the drivers to know? Well, what would you like, yeah, the drivers to know about how you feel on the buses? Obviously, as someone who's not visually impaired, I don't understand how it might feel for you to get onto the buses. So if we can get the drivers aware and replicate it back, then hopefully we can try and make it more comfortable for people with different impairments to use. So
over to, right, Annie. I was going to say, Christine, start off with Christine, and then I know that we've got other people on the call that will be able to contribute to this.
Yeah.
Yes, I think I'm reasonably okay getting on the bus. It's knowing when to ring the bell to get off the bus. So it's knowing in advance where we are near to a bus stop that I would need to get off. Most drivers are very helpful, but sometimes they don't always remember. Or that's my point, really. I can get on, but it's knowing where to get off and knowing when to ring the bell to get off. That's my difficulty.
Okay, that's really good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm going to throw it open to anybody, but Lil, I know, is a frequent traveller. So, Lil, have you got anything you'd like to add to that?
Oh, can we just mention stagecoach?
Yes,
you can.
Yes, you can.
Emily, we'll go get them.
Oh, yes. The number of times I'm starting with Exeter bus station. Like, we've had discussions about this before, and the number of times I get there, I get there reasonably well. I'm partially sighted. I have no central vision, so I can't read the signs. I have found out that you can press a button on the board, and it will tell you the bus timetable. There is no live information at Exeter bus station. There are no staff on hand. When we know they have got a bus driver service. We're not idiots.
Yeah.
They are rude, less than helpful. In fact, I generally wander up and down. They've changed the stand, so now finding where the stand is. I did find somebody to ask the other day, and he said, oh, it's now stand 8, but the bus you went on stand 12, it might have gone, but it should be going in the next 5 minutes. Or 20 minutes later, the bus actually goes. The tannoid system there, you make a note. It's one of these comedy ones, where they say, and that's it.
Also, you can't really hear because of static.
Oh, it's just impossible. And I don't know which way the speakers. We all sort of stand there and laugh and look at each other and say, did anybody get that? And because, my sight loss, I have noticed my hearing has got sharper, even though I'm not like some people who have a more severe sight loss. It's a nightmare, absolute nightmare. It's the lack of information. I had one bus driver. He was on standby to drive buses, and he didn't know which bus he was supposed to be going on. So he came out and he said, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And he was quite laid back and cheerful chap. So he went in and asked the supervisor. There's a station supervisor, I never knew that. And she said, oh, that bus is gone. I announced it on the tannoy. Now, we've been 40 minutes and there had been no tannoy information. So then he came back out and said, well, she said this. And then he went back in again, and he actually drove the bus. He obviously said, I didn't say, there's 20-odd people stood there. Let me drive that bus. But it's just hopeless. I know they did, the RNIB did a lot of work with them trying to improve the service. And I'm sure Les will know the ins and outs of how these things are supposed to work. But I was under the impression, if a bus is, constantly late, do they not have to report to the county council, because they get funding from the county council, that they have an issue with providing the service on these routes? Or what, how do I get through?
So,
I'm just enraged. And so that the bus station is a total nightmare for anybody with hearing, sight loss, any disability whatsoever. It's just a nightmare. And we have, I know people have tried, I've complained to them direct and all the rest of it, and nothing. But, the bus driver.
No response on stagecoach.
Yeah, no response. The bus drivers desperately need training. I mean,
yeah.
I travelled to into London and out, and transport for London, people say, oh, I'm too scared to go to London. They are fabulous. All of the bus drivers have had the training. All, you know, other station staff, everybody, you know, they're just fabulous. So if London can do it, you know, I've been through areas on the outskirts and all the rest of it, and they're fab. Why cannot Stagecoach in Exeter do the same? You know, they've got a fraction of the staff. What is their problem? I'm sorry.
No, I understand your frustration as well.
It is.
They get 5 hours of training. They have to do 5 days of training every 5 years, and disability training is meant to be one of them. But what we are thinking is happening is because obviously COVID has happened and things have gone virtually.
Yeah.
People can't have the experiences of going into wheelchairs or putting like vision loss goggles on, and so they don't understand the problems. I mean, I'm in contact with Brighton and Hove Council at the moment, and I'm trying to replicate some of their training because it's very, very good. But this is why the council ourselves has thought, well, we can see there's a gap, inadequate gap that's occurring. So what can we do to try and make it better? So taking it upon ourselves to try and fix it.
So frustrating, because I know so many people who won't go on the buses because they've had a bad experience, or they've heard of somewhere being, you know, like I've waited 2.5 hours to get back from Exeter. Yeah, and it's just a nightmare. And I have got a daughter who lives in Exeter, but I can't rely on her. But why, you know, they're isolating people. I love to travel. You know, the trains, I'll get on a train and go anywhere. You know, the buses, I have to think twice about, because there's no guarantee there will be a service. That's the trouble. Yeah, sorry, rant over.
No, it's all right. And I'm glad that you're getting out there.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to come along to a council. I'll come to a council meeting and say exactly the same thing, you know, just to get people aware.
I'm staying here, Lil, because actually I'm really pleased you said that, because I'm just starting to go out and about after 12 years of illness. I'm totally blind. I used to have excellent mobility. Admittedly, I'm in a different area, and I'm starting to get the buses. I'm going to get one. I got one, you know, and I'm just keeping it local. But I'm thinking about going into Exeter soon, in a few months, hopefully. But I am frightened, you know, and I've got a husband that he's got to learn to go through a transition of letting me regain my independence. And he's as frightened as I am. And so it is important, these bus companies, I don't like you need the announcements as well. When you're on the bus, you need that audio thing that says the next stop is, you know, sometimes the quality of the audio is not brilliant, but to start with, that's not on the bus. I noticed that I was on the first bus I went on, and I was like, where's that gone? And that was there 12 years, you know. So that's a little bit disconcerting. So I think, yes, Lil, it's absolutely, I'm at that transition going, right, I want to get my independence back after, you know, a long time being, you know, I'm really quite excited. But at the same time, I'm going out there and going, oh my God, it's a different world. Because, as you say, there's been COVID, there's been social cuts. And I don't know what the answer is, but there is a problem. And that's,
I think,
really
the young lady,
young Ren,
is giving you an answer, because you're describing a baptism of fire, and I wouldn't recommend that. I think the service the young lady was talking about, where they get somebody who's willing to go with you on initial journeys until you're familiarised our system or procedure works, that would be ideal.
Yeah.
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 But
in the meantime, I probably will do that, actually, Les, so thanks for reminding me of that. But from what Lil's saying, she's an independent traveller. She's quite competent. Not, you know, we're all competent in our own ways. But do you know what I mean? It's that when you are ready to go solo, because that's the point, isn't it? You want to be as independent as you can be on any given day. As I know, I've been through 12 years and I've not had any because of my... And you have to do it. That's just... You cut your cloth. But when you can, got some ability... you want to use it when you've got it. And so the bus companies, all they've got to do is that announcement, be at the other end, that little bit of assistance, that little bit of information, not just as blind people, visually impaired, but all people probably need that extra information. It's that
I've got a little question, Alan. From, sorry.
Back on buses. Sorry, stop. Yeah.
Go ahead, Alan.
Up
to now, I've always had the use of my car, apart from about 15 months ago. Then my wife, the carer, used to run me about. I'm now having to try and get down to the bus stop, which I can do. But what I'm frightened of is going on the bus to start with. I mean, I don't need a carer, I don't need somebody all the time, I just need somebody to start me off going. All I want to do is get to Sidmouth at the moment from, I mean, I only live about six stops away, not even that.
Yeah.
And it's just that, A, I don't want to be left stood there like a spare part, and I just think, is there a number or some kind of information situation that I can start off with? After that, I might get confidence to do a longer. I'd like to go to Exeter. You know, on my own. I'll have to go on my own. I haven't got a care. I'm living on my own now.
No,
I'm
Alan,
sorry
you've
to
raised
hear
that.
That.
That's a really good point, though. We need a contact number, Jess, so that we can start buddying up our people, our members, with your travel buddies.
Yeah. Yes, I can give you my. I can give you my number, my work number.
Yes.
So if you want to phone me and then and phone
and
me leave on my phone if I'm out, and I'll take it from there, yeah. Because we have got these, this is why we have got these travel buddies and travel trainers coming in, just so we can help get people in the initial confidence, and then obviously then it's the improving the services on the buses. But I agree with the announcement. I know Bristol have them, Birmingham have them, London have them, so we're just waiting for the technology to catch up down here. So just going to give you my number. So it is...
I'll take it down, everyone.
Yep. 01392.
Yep.
383867.
Got it. I have that number, everybody. So those who are interested in signing up for either a travel buddy to help you in that initial stop-to-stop bit, so you need to meet them somewhere and they will sit with you on the bus. Do they cover trains as well, Jess?
Yes, they do.
Right, so any public transport then, or the travel trainers that will help you develop that route, if you like, from your home to somewhere, perhaps a supermarket or a local cafe, or to meet your friends. That's really helpful.
And the travel trainers as well. So they will plan the route with you, and then they'll also do the route with you for the first week, and then they will slowly taper back. So they'll be in the distance. They might be following the bus in their car, but just so that they know that you are en route.
Excellent.
So,
so
you've got a fail-safe.
Now we're getting a bit muddled, so who's got a question?
We've got
Karen and somebody else. Who was the other voice?
Lil.
So let's go with Lil first, then Karen.
Right, the travel buddies, just a question.
Yeah.
Are they part of the adult sensory team?
No, the travel buddies this is part of Connecting You, so this is part of the project that I am currently running with Karen Rose in community transport.
Okay.
And they're part of the Devon communities together as well. So they're volunteers, that have been trained up to a level who then will help on specific routes that you ask them.
Excellent. Thank you. And Karen?
And then the travel trainers are four posts. Sorry, I just wanted to add this in. The travel trainers are four employed posts who are being run by Devon's Communities Together. I don't know if you've heard of that, their charity. They're a very good charity. And they are the ones that are going to assist people. They're the paid positions who are going to assist people. So I just want to know, I want you to know, though, that our funding is only up till May of 2023. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, the DfT only gave us a limited amount of time and funding, but we want to make as big of an impact as we can in the short time space, because we want to get people confident and we want to get people back on buses and trains. So
that would be, I'm sure there are a few people on this call, Jess, that will help you make that impact.
Well, that's me as well. Because I'm Alan, by the way.
Go on, Alan.
Well, it's just that I've never been on the bus because I've always used my wife's car. Well, my car, my wife's car. And my sister-in-law is very good, but she is running a business. And at the end of the day, she's got...
Yeah.
Anyway, long story. And what I am, you know, what is putting me off, I'd love to use the buses, but what is putting me off is getting at some bus station, say Exeter or Sidmouth, and then not being able to get back home. I'm in Sidmouth, I'll get a taxi by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
But what do I do? Do I just stand there? Do I just wait? Talk? Is there somewhere or a number?
Alan, I think that's where the travel trainers would work with you to get familiar with that travel hub, whether it's Exeter, bus station, and they will talk to you about what happens if. And I think that's really important. It is
important
to come up with a travel plan and also for when things don't go as you hoped. When things go slightly awry, knowing where the station supervisor's office is, for example. And that's all part of that work, I'm guessing, of the trainer. So, Alan, I think we'll have a chat afterwards and we'll certainly, I'll give you the number to speak to Jess offline and we can start
I think
that
I've got that number. But anyway, it'll be good.
Lovely, lovely. And I know we had, we had a question from Karen too.
Yes, Jess, I just wanted to go back to Lil's comments and Jane's comments about Exeter bus station. And because that's quite a hub in this area, I wondered what you can actually do. You know, where you take those comments, whether you go to the station and you can kind of talk with them. What comes next from you about that,
your
team?
I believe that Exeter bus station is ran by Stagecoach and Exeter Council.
Correct.
So you would go to Exeter Council, or you would go to Stagecoach themselves.
Wait a minute, Jess. You're saying you. So are you putting it back on us? I mean, what I'm trying to understand is what your team would do. I mean, is there a way that your team can get involved?
We have been trying to get. I can pass these comments onto Exeter Exeter Coach Station themselves, but my team don't do much of the infrastructure side of things. We're more of the community side. So I can pass these comments on, but I can't change the bus station. Does that make any sense? It would be Stagecoach or Exeter City Council that would have to do that.
I think, Karen, you've put it beautifully in that it is a vital hub. So although Jess's team is working very much with almost local transport and community transport and local solutions, without a hub working properly, you're stuck within your own community, really. And the whole point of this is to encourage people to travel further afield. And Exeter bus station is key to that. So we might have to think carefully about how we represent our concerns. And I suspect that Exeter City Council might be the first point of contact. They've been extremely good when it came to their new leisure centre, thinking about the needs of people with low vision. And I think we're pushing on a door that's slightly further ajar than maybe Stagecoach, with the best one in the world, I'm sure, would say we're trying to help all our passengers, but it could be that they are under such pressure. And as you pointed out, it is some of the hard infrastructure, like the tannoy system, and that may be under the control of Exeter City Council. So it could be a case of you do this and you do this, and it will be better for everyone.
But I will pass it up to the higher-ups in my team. Anyway, I will pass
Thank
the concerns
you.
Up, but there's only, I think there's a limit what we can do, because obviously
perhaps,
we don't run the buses.
No, perhaps this is an issue for our Devon Sight Loss Forum to to pick up. We've got another forum members on our call today. It may be a specific piece of work that the forum, with their sort of slightly more formal approach, may be able to gather some information and some case studies. And we all know it's far better to go in a very positive manner. These are our suggestions, how little changes could make a big difference. And with the Jess's team behind us as well, it may have more impact.
I've just seen that it is the bus station is owned by Stagecoach. So
is it?
It's operated. Well, it's operated by Stagecoach, so
yeah,
the facility is operated.
We need to have this conversation, I think, very specifically, and that's what these calls are all about. We've learned a lot from Jess and how we can help her team improve matters for everybody.
We have been campaigning to try and get toilets back opened at stations as well and things like that, but there's only a limited amount we can do on our end.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
It's Karen here. I just suddenly had this vision. I don't think it was a Charlie Boniface thing, but in my mind of kind of like a whole number of us from Devon Insight standing outside Exeter, Stagecoach station with placards saying, because there are so many demonstrations happening at the moment. I thought, maybe that
there
would get them, to a new South West kind of filming it, it's making me smile.
Yes, there we are. We've got several on the phone already with you, Karen. But I think I'd have to check with our chief exec that he is happy for us to.
Yes.
But who knows? And sometimes you do have to make a fuss, don't you, to be noticed?
Judy.
Yeah, you do.
Yes, go
Judy,
on, Mark.
It's Graham.
Oh, hello, Graham.
Hello, Graham.
So the chief exec is actually listening in. I'm doing other work at the same time. But, I'm game on for a demonstration.
Oh.
I never did it as a kid.
Oh, well done.
I want to do it now.
Okay. Right. So we might, with the backing of the community transport team and the Devon County, I think there's a thought. Okay.
I think
Judy,
we can get it covered on TV.
Judy.
Hang on. We've got so many voices.
Graham just finish?
Yes.
I think the thing that we need to stress is that the way that we operate at Devon Insight, although we might call it a demonstration, we might do things for publicity, but we do things in partnership with people. We want to work with the doors that we've opened with Devon County and with community transport schemes and everything else. We do it in a very polite way, and that's all I'm going to say. Now I'm going to go back to writing the newsletter. Bye.
Well, there we are.
As me and Judy discussed the other week, I mean, this is nothing to do with my job, but we were talking about the tactile paving in train stations. So there's a lot of things that need fixing, but obviously not all of us can. We can't all do it.
No.
So.
And we all have to be realistic as well. As Grace just said, we do things in a way, if you're trying to get that man's coat off him, we'd rather use the sunshine than the gale. And it's usually more effective. Yeah. We've had Steve Hyde, the RNIB campaigns manager, on this call. He's done a lot of work, and I think he'd be incredibly upset to hear that, his efforts haven't really resulted in that being Exeter bus station not being particularly accessible for people with sight loss. And I think it might be a piece of work we have to have a look at. We take to our Wednesday group. We can discuss this further on our Wednesday call, which obviously is tomorrow. And we could also ask the forum whether this is an issue that they might like to pick up on. And then we talk to Stagecoach first and say, rather than the placards, Karen, it could be use Exeter bus station safely if you have sight loss. And those are the placards. And we work with them.
Yeah.
And we've tried to get some improvements in there beforehand.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be so bolshy, everyone. I think
it just
came into my mind, made me smile. So
it's good. We need those conversations.
There is a lot of different disability groups are echoing the same kind of record, to say So anyway, I have to run. I'm really sorry, Judy, because I've got another
thing on. Way over. So Jess,
very much for coming today.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's okay. And thank you for your opinions and suggestions.
That was lovely. As Les just said there, your time has been very valuable. So thank you, Jess.
Mm-hmm. And so has yours.
We'll finish today's call and we'll carry on thinking about how we might change things for the better as in partnership with everybody we can work with, which is a great positive way of finishing today's call. So thank you, everybody, for calling in.
Thank you.
Just a reminder that next month we have one of our own trustees talking about his work as a trustee, but also how to get the best from your local optician, because he runs Specsavers in Minehead. So put that in your diary. That's the second Tuesday of the month. And just a quick reminder, those who don't normally call in on a Wednesday, you'll be very, very welcome tomorrow. So goodbye, everybody, and
thank
take
you.
Care.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Bye.